Exton Moss Experiment. Adventures in Wine and Space with Simon Exton and Ken Moss.
Hello, hello everyone, and a very warm welcome to a coronation special of the Exton Moss Experiment. I'm Ken Moss.
I'm Simon Exton, and as I prefer to put it, Juggier's pointless hat party.
Yes, we might be on slightly different sides of the fence here, which is entirely appropriate given what we're about to watch, which is...
It's a Royal Knockout, which is what it's generally known as by everybody, but it was actually called the Grand Knockout Tournament. For those of you who haven't heard of this, one, where have you been? Because we've talked about it any number of times. But two, it was a special edition of the wonderful show from my childhood called It's a Knockout, which again was the British version of the French show Jeux sans frontières. And basically, it was like an early version of Wipeout, but cold. And in the main series, different towns across the country would compete four at a time in a knockout tournament. So I think one per episode. And then they had playoffs and everything. And it was just people larking about doing obstacle courses and running about in these enormous foam rubber outfits, most of which they couldn't see out of. And so they're falling over and barging into each other, scootling along slippery poles and not falling in water and always falling in water. And it was an absolute highlight in my household when I was a kid because my gran absolutely loved it. And it's one of the very few slapstick things that my mum used to quite like because she wasn't a fan of slapstick.
This is something I remember vaguely. My primary memory of It's a Knockout is Stuart Hall laughing his way through it. More
yes,
on
we
that
should mention,
later.
We should mention Stuart Hall. Shall we just get it out of the way? Stuart Hall was seen as a very family-friendly, larky about, laughy, jokey comedian commentator, a bit like a sort of camp version of Eddie Waring. Later investigations have proved to him in the Jimmy Savile and Rolf Harris Club. So this is all we are going to say about Stuart Hall, because he doesn't deserve a further mention, apart from to say that he's a scumbag and should die in jail.
I'll come on to this later, yes. That side of things bears no relevance to the review of this. It did happen.
It doesn't, but I'm not going to apologise for my opinion of Kiddie Fiddlers.
No, that's fair enough. But before we go too far down the serious route, I think we need drinkies. It's time to wave the tonic screwdriver in the general direction of the gin and open up another lovely bottle. For a knockabout romp, we've got a knockout gin. It's Four Pillars, Navy Strength Gin. It's 58.8%, which I think is our strongest gin to date. And the info bollocks says, back in the 19th century, gin was thought to be the panacea to many things encountered on the high seas. The gimlet was invented by a doctor in the Royal Navy to ward off scurvy, with gin to fortify and Rose's lime cordial for vitamin C. But several of the more gin-savvy officers of the Royal Navy suspected their supplies of gin were being diluted, so they devised a test. Often, the gin was stored below deck adjacent to the gunpowder, and if it was spilt onto the gunpowder and it smoked, the gin had been diluted. Only if the gunpowder still lit was the gin at least 114 proof, or 57% ABV. And so it became known as Navy Strength. Four Pillars Navy Strength, my God, it's going on and on, is a gin very much in the Four Pillars style, but with the flavour turned up slightly beyond 11. Fresh ginger brings spiciness to the gin, while turmeric adds weight and a lovely earthiness. Also in the botanical basket are some native finger limes, grown in the Byron Bay. They have an intensity of flavour that's almost impossible to believe, and they help the gin to attain super citrus notes and lovely high-toned freshness.
Well, that's very odd. I mean, it's quite flowery info bollocks. It's actually completely different info bollocks to what's on the side of the bottle.
Well, I was going to say this because
you're reading that off the website.
I am. Frequently, what we read off the website is it bears no relation whatsoever to what's on the bottle.
So on the bottle, it says that it's batch distilled in the Yarra Valley. And we've had one from the Yarra Valley before. And it basically just said, it's Australian and it's got stuff in it. Get on and drink it. And it was lovely. But this says, number one, finger limes. Stronger gin requires strong flavours. And so we add tiny but potent native finger limes to our botanical basket. Number two, Navy Strength. This gin is more than strong enough for your gunpowder to still light in the case of spillage. Under no circumstances should you test this theory. But I think that's a bit of a spoil sport. I was quite looking forward to making up a batch of gunpowder. I've not done that in years. Number three, cocktails. This is the gin to fuel the craft of the serious bartender. And number four, Love Gin. If you want to always taste the gin in your cocktails, this is your juice.
I'm not sure which version I prefer.
It's got prizes. It won a trophy at the Hong Kong IWSC in 2016 and took master at the Global Gin Masters 2015 and 2016. And the bottle that I've got was brewed in the Wilmer and Jude stills in 2018.
This isn't our first Four Pillars. I seem to remember we've had a Negroni of theirs.
I think we had their base gin because I remember talking about the Yarra Valley. And meaning at some point to ask Adam Richard where the Yarra Valley is. And then I think I had too much gin and forgot about it.
Well, first things first, how does it smell? Ooh.
Well, it's got a louche in the glass.
A very gentle one.
It smells quite limey.
It does. Oh, come on. I'm desperate to dive in. Oh, yes.
Ooh. Well, that smacks you around the chops. Ooh. I might have to dilute that down a bit.
What? Oh, I love this. I've got a real soft spot for Navy Strength gins. This is awesome. That's like a gin with a good hard dose of lime in it. I really like it. There's nothing special.
This is a gin and tonic that smacks you around the face with a velvet-wrapped brick. It's gorgeous. It's absolutely gorgeous.
There's nothing beyond gin and lime in this. That's it. There's no flowery botanicals to, you know,
I was going to say we sat through an awful lot of info bollocks, so I think there's definitely that.
There's a lot of info bollocks, but there's not a lot of botanicals to sift out of this. It's strong gin and lime. I bloody love it. 5 out of 5.
Yeah, but what I would say is that we've had other lime gins before. Which one is it? It's the Wickley Neal Brazilian Lime, isn't it? And it just tastes like a standard gin and tonic with a slosh of lime juice in and the sort of thing that you get from having a standard gin with a slice of lime in. Mm. This lime is blended through beautifully. It's not just a, this is gin and we've slopped a bit of lime in. This has obviously been created and blended with the lime to be front and center. And actually, it's quite rare to have a Navy Strength gin that tastes anything other than rocket fuel gin. Don't get me wrong, this is rocket fuel.
It's bloody
But it's rocket fuel
that.
With a lime.
Bernard's?
5, without a doubt.
Splendid. Well, Dr. Axton, it's that time again. We have to descend into the under gallery at Podcasting House. Which door are you opening?
Well, I think I'm going to go for the Imaginarium. We don't normally come into the Imaginarium when we don't have visitors around, mainly because this is where Spaff camps out and there's often stuff around.
His imaginings are not fit for the human mind.
And often quite sticky.
Yeah, I'm trying to avoid that. What are you digging out of your imagination?
Well, I was thinking that this set quite a nice precedent, and it's the royal family showing their true colours, and I think they should do more of that. Pillories would be good as well. So I think we should have a annual troop them out and make sure that we're getting proper entertainment value for the vast amount of money we spaff up their particular wall.
And what do you suggest?
One of those sort of sideshow ducking stool things. You sit them on their fancy throny seat and then whoever chucks enough water at them gets them to drop into a kiddie's paddling pool. Start with that. Throw some gunge in. Bit of green dye as well.
So it's a royal washout, basically.
Basically.
I'm going to take us into the gift shop.
Sunshine, lollipops and rainbows. Everything that's wonderful is what I feel when we're together.
Years ago, there was a failed documentary on the royal family called Royal Family.
Oh, yeah. I'd love to see that.
The scant fragments have been shown over the years, but the whole thing has been locked away, ostensibly never to be shown again, I believe. Sooner or later, it's going to find its way back into the public domain. I would love to see a commercial release of that, largely just to see what a car crash it is. Because there is a morbid fascination with it. I probably don't think it's as bad as was made out. I suspect we'd look back on it now as this very twee, staged, prim and proper painting of what the family life is like. I suspect even at the time it didn't even look like it was anything like the real thing, which is probably why it was locked away. But fascination makes me want to dig it out.
Yeah, and anything that makes the royal family look like a bunch of twats, I'm all for.
He's off. Put your tin hat on into the air, Ed Shelton.
On the subject of which, shall we watch It's a Royal Knockout?
Run, VT!
What a wondrous team we have. First of all, the winsome Toya Wilcox. What think of this pebble?
Well, we've been training in shark-infested waters, so we're pretty calm about this.
Yes, so you work for London Weekend, over there. And next we have Barry McGuigan. What think of our chances, my boy?
Well, as long as I get over the other side without Tom throwing the ham at me.
You could call it an ambush. Sorry about that, Barry. Christopher Reeve, how do you think?
I'm in trouble here. This is not my element.
Oh, he's not your element. Well, that was straight to the point. Over there, Christopher. Last but never least, Steve Cram.
Well, I think I'm definitely going to go in.
Well, I think you're going to go in, man. Right, take your places, please. On the groaning table, Tom Jones and the ever-lovely Jenny Agata. With your permission, Lord Knock, may I commence the marathon?
3, 2, 1...
Oh, and they're off.
Here we go.
Well, that was certainly a thing. An hour. God, all fucking mighty, an hour.
It's so short. Isn't it marvellous?
I went into this with such low expectations. They were not disappointed. It was terribly shit.
Oh, it's utterly shit.
But
beyond the utterly shit point to where it just becomes amazingly shit and so entertaining. It's the El Dorado of Jeux Sans Frontières.
I can't quite believe how entertained I was by something so utterly bad.
There are a few remarkable standout points.
Princess Anne looking from the word go, what the fuck am I doing here?
All the others wildly enthusiastic at the beginning. Rah, rah, rah. We'll have a little shout about. And she just goes, no, with a strong silent tone. Fuck off. And then she ends up winning the thing.
She was one glass of gin away from telling Stuart Hall to fuck off.
Of that generation, and actually of most of the royal family, Anne is my favourite.
Well, she is considered to be one of the hardest working royals. Beavering away very quietly in the background, but very diligently and relentlessly.
She's also my favourite character in the Windsors.
Well, it was very difficult not to picture the Princess Anne from the Windsors on screen in It's a Royal Knockout.
Particularly in the most recent thing where they do the flashbacks to about this era. We'll talk about it after we finish It's a Royal Knockout. So, internal spoilers. That sounds awful, doesn't it?
It does a bit. First things first, the guest list in this thing.
Oh, it's phenomenal. It's absolutely phenomenal. Dame Kiri Takanawa was in one of those costumes. Jenny Agata, Anthony Andrews, Tom Jones, George Lazenby. They got George Lazenby to do this. John Travolta.
I imagine this is about the time the Duchess of York's team
had every member of Frankie Goes to Hollywood.
Well, I imagine that at the time they were filming Superman 4 because both Christopher Reeve and Margot Kidder are in this. A couple of the Pythons are in there. You've got
Griff Rhys-Jones, Annika Rice. Oh, it's like a who's who of 80s B-listers. Kevin Kline, I wouldn't have thought he'd be particularly well. Would he have been filming A Fish Called Wanda at the time?
I thought A Fish Called Wanda was a couple of years later, but I could have been wrong there.
I mean, this was 87.
I thought Fish Called Wanda was 89. I could be wrong.
Fuck me, Charles Bronson was in it. I mean, I'm just looking at the list on...
I'm going to say, I've got the list in front of me on Wikipedia.
We're not going to go through everybody. Bill Wyman.
John Mills. Now, early on in, I think it was probably in one of the earliest games, when the headless ghosts are coming out to chase them down the field, who is it gets properly pile-driven into the ground? I think it's Judy Simpson.
Oh, the one that they have to carry off?
Yes, because she's just been basically shoulder-barged to the floor by a wrestler.
And of that ghost game, and it was basically one of the female competitors from one team playing a sack race. So hopping along and had to pick up these fake paper flowers. And behind her, this giant thing in an enormous
headless ghost costume
that must have been about 9 foot tall, with these great foam rubber boots that must have been 2.5 foot long, came stomping along and had to try and catch up. And there was only one of them that actually managed to catch up with the leaping girl, presumably because the poor woman had one look behind her and thought, fuck me, no way that thing's catching up with me. And Bunny hopped for her life, possibly quite literally. But the one that did catch up, it was just an absolute shoulder barge. I mean, you'd be sent off a rugby match for behaving like that. And it's just, oh, we'll pick her up and we'll have, I don't know, Annika Rice or something having a quick look at her ankle. And then you never saw her again.
There were so many people in there, though, that looked so uncomfortable and out of their comfort zone. Jane Seymour.
Jane Seymour had no clue what was going on.
Not at all.
It was just sort of, oh, is this what we do in England?
Fell into a freezing cold pool of water when they're on that rolling log game. Jackie Stewart falling into that water. The look on his face coming out of that.
But, I mean, the one who absolutely stole that show was Toya. She was brilliant.
Oh, aye, yes. She was game for anything.
As she sings about in some of her most recent albums, it's In the Court of the Red Queen or something like that.
You might have the edge Scarlet on Queen. It, old boy.
It's very good. It's filthy, but it's very good. Brilliant live. Anyway,
I believe so, yes. But the top and tail of each act is Rowan Atkinson as Lord Nock. Suspiciously and almost indistinguishably, Lord Blackadder, accompanied by Sue Pollard and Barbara Windsor, and Les Dawson.
Les Dawson in a pink-tighted Henry VIII costume. He walks out and he's got this stoic look about him. You think I'm going to be embarrassed about this? I've been doing the Northern Club circuit for the last two decades. You are going to have to up your game. I loved Les Dawson. I think his comedy is hilarious. He's a stand-up who can just stand up on stage and doesn't have to say anything, and I'm laughing.
Well, he was absolutely perfect to introduce all the guests. Sue Pollard walking around as she always does, just laughing and being completely clueless and getting it wrong, and basically Peggy Oldenshaw from Heidi High off-screen as well as on. Dawson, though, the man is a god. And he was a whisker away from, right, you've said enough now, piss off, next. Desperately trying to wring any personality out of personalityless personalities like Nigel Mansell. No idea what to say when they've got a microphone thrust at them because that's not their forte.
Or but what they were doing. Pamela Stevenson was going for it with both fists, wasn't she?
There were some of them really got into the spirit of the things, but yeah, they generally were the entertainers. The ones that weren't were...
And the English entertainers, because they knew what they'd signed themselves up for, because this had been going on for years by this stage.
Oh, the Americans looked absolutely terrified.
What the fuck? We thought this was going to be a chat show. Where's Parky?
Christopher Reeve shimmying along a rolling log, having rubber ham thrown at him. It's deeply shit, but that was ruinously entertaining. I can't quite believe how entertained I was by something that was so utterly lousy. The Royals themselves, when they came on screen and introduced each of their teams, I've got to give them their dues. Three of the four of them really went for it. It's widely understood that Buckhouse thought this was a dreadful idea and they shouldn't do it. But it was Eddie's way of finding a career after he'd finished his stint in the Royal Marines. And
he was so bad. None of them were good at the improv. Actually, the best one was Anne, who clearly did not want to be there and was just so dismissive. Yeah, she was wonderful every time she was on screen.
I'm so glad that her team won. It's like, right, we've played your poxy little game, we've won, now fuck off.
And I'm not sure the costumers liked Prince Edward, because Not sure how he moved in those trousers. They were a little on the snug side. I mean, Andrews might have been, but he kept a cloak around him all the time.
Yeah, I didn't actually know it. Even though he was introduced as the Duke of York, when he first came on screen, I actually thought he was Edward. Because you didn't see a lot of his face. It was obscured by his hat. I mean, looking back on it now, what were they thinking?
But I'd love to see a modern version. Who would you have in a modern version?
Well, you'd probably have Bill and Kath. I think they'd be up for it, actually.
Wouldn't it be fantastic if you had William and Catherine and Harry and Meghan? Oh, that would be so much fun.
Launching rubber hams at each other. At least one of them would have an impacted face.
I mean, who else is there that you can think of that hasn't been on the Windsors?
None, because I don't know any of the minor royals.
But I think of Beatrice and Eugenie. I've no idea what they actually look like, because my mental image is the two actresses from the Windsors.
In actual fact, they're not a million miles off. It's eyes and teeth for Beatrice and Eugenie. They've got it quite right. I've got to admit that the Windsors, which we will come on to in a minute. We'll get this out of the way. But I have always preferred the parody versions of what people believe the royal families be like. So I always love the spitting image setup of the royal family. This horrific parody was wildly entertaining. I suspect far more entertaining than the actual royal family are.
Yes, I think you're probably right, because they were meant to be entertaining in the same way that the Windsors is meant to be entertaining. Camilla is Cruella de Vil.
You're skipping ahead, Dr. X.
Yes, just a little bit. And actually, it wasn't until after they'd made themselves into figures of fun with this that everybody else thought, oh, well, we're allowed to now. Let the professionals at it.
I don't know. Spitting Image by this point had a real good go at them. 85, 86 was, they were brutal. And they'd got into this stride by this point in the Spitting Image run. So it didn't help, let's put it that way. And I know we've danced around it, but from a purely technical level, I did like Stuart Hall as the presenter.
He did it for a long time because he was good at it. We will leave it there.
Apparently. Stable of presenters who are no longer suitable dinner guests. And regrettably, he's one of them. But it is a shame because the on-screen presence was. And Paul fucking Daniels. Oh, God. I find Paul Daniels intensely irritating.
He was a bit shit in this. And the interplay between him and Jeff Capes just didn't work.
Well, Jeff Capes at one point looked like he was about to deck him when he said, I'm just taking a detour around Jeff Capes' waist. And Capes didn't actually genuinely look very impressed with that little joke, Ed.
But, I mean, those parts of it would have been scripted, so he'd have known what was coming.
Yeah.
Reading the Wikipedia page, there's a very entertaining thing about the after interviews with the press, which demonstrates just how unready for any kind of media career Eddie Boy was. And it says, immediately after the event, Prince Edward asked the assembled journalists, well, what did you think? The journalists, unbeknown to Edwards, hadn't seen the event as they remained in the press tent separate from the celebrities and members of the royal family who had taken part. And they were apparently unhappy at such an arrangement. Well, you know, sitting there in a free bar compared to being subjected to all of this, you can see how more sensible people would be keen on that. So after asking that, they responded with nervous laughter, presumably because they didn't have anything realistic they could say. And Prince Edward stormed out of the press conference, sarcastically thanking the journalists for their enthusiasm.
Oh, dear.
Which demonstrates how media savvy he wasn't.
Yeah. Oh, dear. On the whole, it was unreasonably entertaining. I think the royal side of things is the tiniest part. The cast list. I think the most entertaining bit was watching all the ones that were wildly out of their depth, just baffled by the whole thing. I found that hilarious. Whichever poor woman it was, and I can't remember, getting pile-drived to the ground to the point where her shattered bones were carried off. less entertaining. I did actually feel a bit uncomfortable watching that. But the whole thing is so deeply shit, I have to love it. I shouldn't.
I really enjoyed it, partly because It's a Knockout is massively nostalgically entertaining for me. because I do remember watching it first time around, not back to the first editions because it started in 1966, but I remember the late 70s and the 80s versions. And they had almost an end of the pier quality about them, it was deeply shit, and we all knew it was deeply shit, and it didn't stop you enjoying it.
It's a period of television history, though, that I'm happy to leave where it is.
But that's probably true for an awful lot of television that came out in the 1970s and was entertaining.
As we found to our cost, having sat through it.
Just, again, reading the Wikipedia thing, I hadn't realised that by the time this came on, It's a Knockout had been cancelled.
Oh, had it?
Yeah. This was recorded on 15th of June 1987 and shown on the 19th of June 1987. And It's a Knockout had been cancelled in 1982.
82?
Apparently.
Oh, a number of specials were broadcast until Christmas 88. Ah, right. That's why I remember it.
66 to 82, number of specials, 1990 telethon with Bernie Clifton as the host, Welsh version from 91 to 94, later redubbed into English by Stuart Hall, appeared in lots of European countries, with each version putting their winning teams forward to the international version of Jeux Sans Frontières. Australia had one, New Zealand had one. United States had one that lasted for a month in 1975.
Channel 5 bought the rights to the show with referee Frank Bruno and scorekeeper Nell McAndrew. Two series. As with previous versions, the theme tune was Beanbag by Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass. So, let's move forward a few years to about a week ago. It's the Windsors Coronation Special.
Finally, it's going to happen. Westminster Abbey pegged to the gills. World leaders staring at me in awe. No, no, President Biden. No need to kneel. Crowds chanting my name.
Charles! Charles! Charles!
You, hello, my dear.
I was asking you how I look. Fit to be your queen.
The Windsor's Coronation Special was first broadcast on the 30th of April, 2023. The Windsors are back, and they're more deluded and dysfunctional than ever before. Plus, one of them is being crowned king. Charles's whole life has been building up to this moment, and he wants the UK's first coronation in 70 years to be a spectacular affair with all the pomp and circumstance he deserved, as does his queen consort Camilla, who can't wait to drape herself in diamonds and fur.
With Peter Davison as William IV.
I know. Oh, now, I didn't know about this until you messaged me the other night. It's marvellous. A brand new episode of The Windsors, a one-off special. All the original cast are back, including the original Harry, because Harry was recast for the third series, presumably because the original Harry wasn't available. And I laughed my way through the whole hour.
It was great. I don't think it's the best episode there's been. I still think that the first series, and particularly where you have the dynasty-style bitch fights, the third series in this missed one of those. As much as I love her as a character, her Wicked Witch Fenella just popping up out of nowhere ability of Anne would mean that that kind of bitch fight wouldn't work. But a Meghan-Kate bitch fight, could you imagine that? They kind of had it a bit with the alternate memory thing with Willie and Harold.
The whole thing is some grotesque parody of the coronation. Oh, God, how many moments in this thing are just marvellous. Prince Edward shagging...
You see, that bit didn't work for me. They'd obviously realised that casting Edward as the family idiot in a family of idiots didn't really work. So they've tried to put him as something else, but this nothing to look at, but behind the scenes sex maniac kind of doesn't work with Edward.
It was a different dimension we've certainly not seen before. I've got to admit, I'm not sure it entirely worked.
I don't think that bit worked. Beatrice and Eugenie going to the north.
They eat hot pot. Alexa, make the tea.
They reinvent themselves as the railway children. Stop waving a flag made out of a thong.
See, I do love the way that the Beatrice and Eugenie actresses they're now playing up to their own style of portrayal by really dragging out the last words of the sentence. And the more they do it, the funnier it gets.
Yeah. They needed a song like that Christmas song.
You really love that Christmas song, didn't
you? I love that Christmas song. It is the funniest thing by far. Well, maybe the bitch fights, but other than that, it's the funniest thing that's been in the Windsors. And the corgis. Looking after the corgis, feeding them sushi. And then Camilla comes along and does her Cruella de Vil bit.
Sophie Wessex as the timid little mouse. It doesn't have any lines. I think they've really pulled out the stops for this. I get where you're coming from, that it's not the funniest episode in the series. But bugger me, I really, really laughed at this.
Oh, I mean, Alan and I watched it and we were chuckling all the way through. It wasn't the laugh out loud belly laughs that we had with the first series, but it was still brilliant.
Peter Davison was a highlight, though.
Yeah, I mean, I don't actually know anything about William IV other than the fact that he deliberately had a very cheap coronation because the country was in some fairly ruinous financial state.
It was quite an on-point sort of pithy comeback, though, really. Yes, and nobody remembers you. And it is true, if you look at all the kings through history, and they are predominantly the kings, the ones that you remember are the outspoken, sort of made an impact ones. There's any number of kings that nobody remembers at all for anything. And Bill IV, apart from having a pub in Preston that's no longer there, I don't know a thing about. I can't remember.
He was the last Hanoverian king. His successor was Victoria. Served in the Royal Navy as his in his youth and was later nicknamed the Sailor King. Well, hello.
Restrain yourself, boy.
His reign oversaw the abolishment of slavery in almost all of the British Empire, so we should probably remember him for that.
Well, he's a contemporary of Wilberforce.
1830 to 1837, so it's not like he was on the throne for an awful long time. Mm. Had no surviving legitimate children, but was survived by 8 of the 10 illegitimate children that he had with an actress, with whom he cohabited for 20 years.
Harking back to the Peter Davison thing, though, I do love those former monarch flashbacks or hallucinations or conversations that William has. I think they really work. It's a lovely little idea. Now, did this leave you hungry for more? That's the question.
What, of the Windsors?
Mm.
Or Jeux sans frontières? Because I would quite happily watch lots of either of those. Charlie Boy's Pointless Hat Party, I'm leaving the country for. I will be spending the weekend in Prague, so I don't have to deal with any of the fucking idiocy.
I will not. I will be waving my flag happily, cheerfully, and
Dirty Boy.
Basking in the joy of being an Englishman. I'm just enjoying it for the pomp and ceremony of a little bit of a party for the country. I think regardless of your stance on it, it'll be a nice long weekend for everybody. At the bare basic minimum, the whole country gets a nice weekend where everybody, whatever your side of the fence you fall, will take advantage of an extra day off. The vast majority, those who are in certain professions, won't get a day off.
I will, because I've told them I'm not going in. So I'm getting a weekend off.
Yes.
I'm at the point in my career where I can say, I am not working this day.
Oh, I can't wait to achieve that level of magnificence.
Well, I mean, you could say the same thing. You might not have a job after it, but...
Yeah, that's the difference between me and thee. But on the whole, this little sidestep for us, I really thought I was going to hate It's a Royal Knockout. I was cringing for the opening moments when they were all introduced. As it went through, I found myself absolutely gripped. I did enjoy it. I would encourage people to track it down on the tube purely for the entertainment value. It is not quality television, but it's blindingly entertaining. The Windsors, I would encourage people to watch because that is blindingly entertaining and good. So I've had two really good hours of watching in prep for this podcast. Yourself?
I absolutely love It's a Knockout. It was a huge part of my childhood. It was a real family moment where we all got together and watched it because, like I say, my gran loved it. I don't know what my sister thought of it or if she even remembers it because it's possibly a little bit before her time. It was one of the few comedy things that my mum actually liked because about the only comedy thing she liked was slapsticks. We all watched it and we were all entertained by it. It shows most of the royal family, or three-quarters of the royal family that were competing, to be humourless arses who are desperately trying to be the life and soul of the party. The only one I actually liked was Anne, who clearly did not want to be there from the word go. It was very much a, what the fuck are you making me do this for, you horrible little oik?
If you'd have transposed her with Vicky Pepperdine, I don't think you'd have noticed the difference.
That bit where Vicky Pepperdine as Anne was doing her Sweeney bit. I suspect you're going to wish Juggy and Charlie and his pointless big hat party a happy day.
And I wish you a happy weekend in Prague, escaping the whole lot.
I am quietly hopeful that he will make such a fucking awful job of it that he's the last monarch that we'll have.
Well, to whatever weekend you're having out there, boys and girls, cheers.
Bye now.
The Exton Moss Experiment featured Simon Exton and Ken Moss. All featured soundtracks are the property of their respective producers, and no infringement of copyright is intended. Title music was performed by the BBC Symphony Orchestra, and the programme was produced by Maverick Productions. For more information, please visit maverickproductionsuk.blogspot.com or find us on social media.